The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We're always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about terrorism, always a topic that we discuss on Fed Access, always a very, very important topic, because we always want to know what's going on in terms of what's happening in the world, our counterterrorism efforts. Is there a growth in terms of terrorism? Are we defeating the terrorists? What can we forecast towards the future? We want to kind of get an understanding of these things. Today, we're talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He's an expert on this area. He is teaching at the Marine Corps University. He is the Major General Matthew C. Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory, and one of his areas is terrorism. He also has a blog called The Gorka Briefing, and that's T-H-E-G-O-R-K-A briefing.com, thegorkabriefing.com, where he blogs about a number of different issues that are relevant to terrorism, international affairs, and everything else. Dr. Gorka, thank you for joining us on Fed Access.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's our pleasure. Talk to us. You know, there's a lot of things happening. And the first thing I want to discuss with you today is about this Yemen situation. And as you know, we've been dealing with Yemen for quite some time. We have forces over there. Our embassy recently has closed. We've withdrawn all the special forces out of that region. What's going on in Yemen that we can see, and what can we anticipate?
Well, the war on terror for the last 14 years has had America focused almost exclusively on al-Qaeda and other groups that are affiliated with it. And now we have, of course, ISIS. And the common denominator between them has been Sunni jihadism. So it's this extreme ideology of jihad from members of the Sunni Islamic faith. What we've really not been tracking adequately, especially in the mainstream media, is the reality that this isn't just a war between America and her allies and groups like al-Qaeda and ISIS that are Sunni extremists, but it's actually an intra-religious war. It is just as much about the Shia extremism of the region as headquartered in Tehran, and which version of Islam. Is it going to be a Sunni extremist one like ISIS, or is it going to be a Shia extremist version of Islam that is more powerful in the region? And the fall of Sana'a, the fall of Yemen, fits into this equation exactly. There is now a Houthi-controlled capital. The Houthi insurgents are on the side of the Shia, especially Tehran. And we have to appreciate that this is now the fifth capital that is under the influence or control of the mullahs of Iran. We have Tehran itself, we have Damascus, we have Beirut. Baghdad is really under the control politically of the Shias and the mullahs, and now we've had the capital of Yemen fall as well. So the situation in Yemen is evidence of a rise in Shia extremism in the region, not just Sunnis like al-Qaeda or ISIS.
What you're sharing is this bigger picture, and especially as we're dealing with Iran on this nuclear issue. I was looking just recently. Iran has parked a destroyer right outside of Yemen, and it seems that the influence, and quietly, I don't know how quiet this is, but Iran is slowly but surely building their areas of influence. So what does that mean for us?
Well, yeah, this is something that the big picture is really something that we don't talk about enough. And I do a lot of work with Muslim officers, Muslim allies of the United States, and they talk about the rise of the Shia crescent or an encirclement of the Shia extremists. What it means for America is that this isn't just about Syria and Iraq. The idea that we have to be involved in airstrikes against insurgent forces in just two countries is really missing the enormity of the situation. And specifically that the Sunni extremists are bad. Yes, they decapitate Christians, they kill Yazidis, they kill Muslims that disagree with them. But when you look at the Shia part of the equation, it's potentially much more dangerous. This is a country that since 1979 has killed scores of Americans, hundreds of our allies, has been a sponsor of international terrorism, wishes to see our ally Israel completely wiped off the face of the earth, and declares us as the great Satan and that we must be destroyed. And at the same time, we're negotiating with them about nuclear power and potentially their access to weapons-grade nuclear material. So what it means for America is that it may not be an imminent close-range threat, but the rise of Shia extremism is clearly at least a medium-range threat to the national security of the United States.
You know, we've seen, and you just kind of talked about the dynamic of ISIS and Sunni influence and kind of their extremism. I think everybody has been shocked, by the beheadings and a number of different things. This seems to be a battle that, Sunni and Shia, they're kind of always going at each other, and there's never a moment of peace. Is there a way, and I don't know if we have an answer to this, Dr. Gorka, is there a way in which you can see forward where there can be peace in the region? I mean, with the Sunnis, are they so concerned? Are each group so concerned that each one will kill each other that they're going to always be fighting?
Well, the first thing we have to do is also have a historic perspective. Why do we have Sunni and Shia in the world today? Mm. Because this is an argument that's been going for 1,400 years.
Okay.
The reason we have Sunni and Shia is because of a disagreement between who should have been the caliph, the emperor of Islam, after the death of Muhammad. Some people said just the wisest, holiest man. They became the Sunnis. And then others said, no, we want a dynasty for Islam. We want anybody who is a blood relative can be considered, but they have to be a blood relative of Muhammad, and that's where Shiism came from. Shia actually means the party of Ali. That is, of course, Muhammad's cousin. So this is a long, long thing that we're not going to solve. This is a long conflict that we're not going to solve with the tabletop agreements or treaties. What could we see in the future? I think we have to have a stable Iraq. Right now, Iraq has numerous factions that do not believe in the capacity of the government in Baghdad to represent them. You have the Kurds, you have the Sunnis, you have other groups that are not vested in the survival of this nation as a coherent whole. On top of that, we have to look at successful models of modern Islamic State. And there's only really two out there that have proven the test of time. Number one is what President Atatürk did with Turkey in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and that is a very aggressive secularization. That you can have a country of Muslims, but the politics has to be secular. Like we have separation of church and state, mm-hmm. You've got to have separation of mosque and state. That's okay. One model. And the other model is the Jordanians. I do a lot of work with the Jordanians. Here you have a country that really is modern, it wants to be part of the West, and their huge asset is it's a Hashemite kingdom, which means the king and his family are descended from Muhammad. That's a very difficult model to replicate, but it does provide huge legitimacy. So we have to look for new models, and we have to have a situation in which the members of individual communities are vested in the survival of the current nation states that exist in the region.
Would you say that Saudi Arabia is a model that is working or is not working?
I think Saudi Arabia is very, very fragile because it was created originally on this Wahhabist ideology. It was a brokered deal between the House of Saud and Ibn Wahhab that really created a fundamentalist religious identity for the state because of the presence of Mecca and Medina, of course. But right now we see the price they have paid for that fundamentalist interpretation of Islam. There is a lot of instability in the country. A lot of the extremism is actually been encouraged by some of the members of the royal family over the last decade. So Saudi Arabia was its very Sharia-compliant, religiously sanctioned constitutional order isn't perhaps the best model for the region.
We are talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He's an expert on terrorism, expert on the Middle East, expert on the whole region. We are trying to get an understanding of this terrorist situation, everything that's going on with ISIS and everything that's going on with Yemen and much, much more. He is the Matthew C. Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at Marine Corps University down in Quantico. teaching Marines about terrorism, teaching Marines about the Middle East, and teaching Marines about what's going on strategically and how we can deal with some of these issues. You can also find them at thegorkabriefing.com, and that's the Gorka, and that's G-O-R-K-A briefing.com. We'll be right back after this break and continue to get some of this expert advice from Dr. Gorka. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about terrorism, definitely one of the important issues that we always discuss on Fed Access. And we are talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is an expert on terrorism, an expert on the Middle East, has been doing this for a long, long time, has his hand in a lot of different areas in terms of advising strategic leaders about terrorism, in terms of developing solutions and understanding not only the current issues, but also the historical reasons why these issues exist. He's a Matthew C. Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at Marine Corps University, where he's teaching Marines about terrorism, about the Middle East and other areas. And he also has a blog called The Gorka Briefing. And you can find that at the G-O-R-K-A briefing.com. So definitely check him out there. Dr. Gorka, we were talking about the dynamic of, you know, Saudi Arabia, talking about Jordan, talking about Turkey, and maybe some of these areas that are more established, especially when you mentioned about Jordan and Turkey as possible being models that maybe other places can take on. We're seeing Saudi Arabia now try to get everybody together, and they're doing airstrikes and all this other kind of stuff. Is Saudi Arabia concerned that they're starting to be surrounded by Iran, especially with Iraq and other areas? It seems as if they're starting to feel a certain kind of way.
Yes, absolutely. And we need to have a longer range perspective on this issue as well, because Saudi Arabia's involvement in Yemen seems to have caught a lot of people by surprise, but really it's nothing new. If you look at the lesser well-known aspects of the Cold War, the fact is that Saudi Arabia has been involved through proxies for decades in fighting those people in the region, such as the Shia insurgents, that it saw as a threat to its nation. Now, back then, during the Cold War, this was done very covertly, behind the scenes. The only real difference today is their public engagement, their overt military engagement in Yemen. On top of that, there's an interesting subplot that it's not just about the Shia threat to Saudi Arabia. We know the connection, especially after a monumental event in 1979 called the Siege of Mecca, when some Sunni jihadists captured the Holy Mosque in Mecca. We've known about the connection between the extremists and members of the Saudi elite for many, many years after 1979. But that relationship has been reassessed quite vigorously in recent years. It has dawned on members of the House of Saud that the jihadists, so groups like Al-Qaeda, may have been prepared to accept the support and even the finance of individual members of the royal family or the government, but they are also on the target list of the jihadis. You may want to fight the infidel. You may want to kill Christians or Yazidis in the Middle East if you're a group like Al-Qaeda or ISIS. But sooner or later, on your target list, you will find other Muslims, people that they deem to be apostates or have left the faith. So just like that unfortunate Jordanian fighter pilot who was burnt alive by ISIS. He was a Muslim, but he was deemed to be an apostate, not a real Muslim, and as a result, he had to be killed. Saudi Arabia realizes they fall into that category sooner or later, so they're being squeezed really from two directions. They see a threat from the rise of Shia-influenced groups that are backed by Iran, and they also see the potential threat for Sunni extremists to come after them, even though they are Sunnis as well.
You know, Dr. Gorka, tell me if I'm correct on this, because it seems to be, and this seems to be, that we're not discussing these issues, as you mentioned, and we cover the when things happen very, very quickly, like an ICE, like a beheading or something like that. But to me, there seems to be a long game here that we may be missing. And there's a long game in terms of very, very strategic influence in the area. As we look at the coastal regions and you know, if they control, you know, the Yemen, that's the Gulf of, you know, Aden, that's the, a lot of areas can be controlled if you start getting certain territory and you control ports, you can control maybe oil and coming in and out. What's the long game on this?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. One of our biggest challenges when dealing with the violence and the crises of today is our very, very short attention span in the West, and especially in Washington. We think about, you know, how many burning issues do we have in our inbox on our BlackBerry, and can we solve problems by tomorrow or next week?
Right.
In many cases, we are facing enemies who don't think about next week or next month. They think about decades. And in the case of groups like Al-Qaeda or ISIS, they think about centuries.
Right.
Let me give you one specific example. On June 30th last year, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, declared from the Grand Mosque in Mosul the reestablishment of the caliphate, the theocratic empire of Islam. That's why it's so important not really to call this group ISIS anymore or even ISIL. The technical term for it today is the Islamic State, because it has control of territory and it's redeclared the caliphate. Now think about one thing. The caliphate was dissolved by President Ataturk of the secular Turkish Republic back in 1924.
Wow.
So they've been thinking about this for 90 years.
People have been holding that grudge. And holding they've been holding that grudge for long term. Yeah.
And a lot of people have talked about it. Al-Qaeda, Bin Laden, Zawahiri, the new head of it, Zarqawi, that guy in Iraq, Zawahiri, the American citizen that was running things in Yemen for Al-Qaeda. They all talked about the need to reestablish the empire, but ISIS has made it a reality. They've made the dream a ground truth. And that's the kind of people we face. There's this great cliche from our soldiers, our brave Marines and soldiers in Afghanistan, that they were told hundreds and hundreds of times by local tribal leaders, by even members of the Taliban, you may have the wristwatches, but we have the time. In these cultures, in these nations, they have a much, much longer range perspective.
We always talk about, I just want to get your perspective on this. We always talk about the dynamic of that they're against the Western dynamics or the Western influence. Is it our influence in the region? Is it that we have so much influence in the region that they seem to be against America? I mean, what's your take on that long term, that they feel like, hey, these guys have done certain things against us, or they see grievances? What is the take that they see against the Western, whether it be us or, European countries or whatever the case is?
There's absolutely no secret here. You don't even have to guess at what they believe or how they interpret the world today. You just have to read what they say or their great thinkers. Just like we in the West have our 80-pound strategic brains. We study Clausewitz here at Marine Corps University. We study Mackinder, Boyd, these great Western thinkers.
Right.
We look at Petraeus and his counterinsurgency manual. Okay, well, the bad guys have their strategic masterminds, and you can read their books. The ones that I think are essential and I teach to everybody, you can access them through my website, thegorkabriefing.com. The book Milestones by Syed Qutb, one of the most important, if not the most important, strategist of the Muslim Brotherhood. Then Brigadier S.K. Malik's The Quranic Concept of War. Incredibly important textbooks. And then there's also the fatwa, the 25-page fatwa by Abdullah Azam called Defense of Muslim Lands. And Azam's important because Azam was Bin Laden's boss and spiritual guide. And the common thread in all of these publications is very clear. Islam has lost the way. Islam is not the most powerful entity in the region because Muslims have been unfaithful and because Islamic culture has been penetrated and attacked by Western civilization, not just during the colonial period, but today, whether it's blue jeans or pop music, we have assaulted them with our culture. As a result, their message is Islam is under attack. And if you are a true believer, you must be engaged in jihad against the infidel, against the kuffar. So these books tell you what their strategy is, how they see the world. It's not really about, our support to Israel or the what we did in Gulf One. These are all secondary or tertiary issues. It's about their interpretation of pure Islam and that we have perverted it or we have undermined it with our cultural and political influence.
We're talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. We're talking about terrorism. We're talking about the Middle East. We're talking about what's going on in this whole region, whether it be Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, so many different issues, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, AQAP. And there's so many different things on the table that we're dealing with. But this is not a short-term issue. This is a long-term issue of not just terrorism, but strategic influence of some of the key players in the area, Iran and Saudi Arabia and other people who are all battling for the influence of the Middle East. We're talking about this and much more. When we come back, we're going to get a little bit more into the influence on individuals with ISIS and other areas and how that impacts us over here in America. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more. Dr. Gorka is a professor at Marine Corps University. He's the chair, distinguished chair of theory at Marine Corps University. He also has a blog, thegorkabriefing.com, and that's the G-O-R-K-A briefing.com. Check both of those things out as you get a chance. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Derek T. Dorch on Fed Access. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about terrorism. We're talking about what's going on in the Middle East, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in the world very, very soon. But right now, we've been dealing with these situations with ISIS, or as Dr. Gorka calls the Islamic State, the Caliphate. We've been dealing with all these different issues. Yemen has fallen in terms of our resources there. We no longer have an embassy there. Our special forces have withdrawn from the region. There's a number of different things that are going on that have a long-term impact on us and our strategic influence around the nation and also strategic resources that we utilize from those different areas. We're getting a take on that right now. We're talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is the Major General Matthew C. Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at Marine Corps University. He's there teaching about the Middle East, teaching about terrorism, and teaching about strategic issues to Marine Corps officers who are going to be dealing with these issues in the long term. He also has a site called, the blog called the Gorka Brief, and that's the G-O-R-K-A briefing.com. A lot of good resources on there on terrorism and a number of other things. So please check it out. Dr. Gorka, as we look at this, you know, and now we've been have had concerns about people who are, you know, whether it be Americans or whether it be Canadians or whether it be anyone else who has gone over, went to try to go to Syria or other places and get influenced by ISIS or join the fight or join the jihad. What's the influence on this stuff?
Well, the really troubling aspect about ISIS is not only do they really control territory and are a fully fledged insurgency, which is something that Al-Qaeda never really did by itself. Al-Qaeda always had to attach itself like a parasite onto indigenous insurgencies like the Taliban in Afghanistan or Al-Shabaab in Somalia. ISIS is a standalone insurgent force, but also the Islamic State, ISIS, are true masters at information warfare and psychological operations. Al-Qaeda had its magazines like Inspire. It had the odd video lecture or sermon from Zawahiri or Bin Laden. But this group, the Islamic State under Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, has a whole social media empire. They are on Twitter. They are on Facebook. They're on social media every single day. They make these incredible videos, these propaganda videos that are shocking but are very, very powerful and important. I've actually stated that any taxpayer, any believer in democracy and freedom needs to watch these in their unedited versions, not the dumbed down, redacted ones that have the nasty bits cut out of them and edited, but the full ones that you can find online, because only when you see another human being sever a human person's head and taking 3 minutes to do so, do you understand the level of commitment of these people and the severity of the threat to the United States? These videos are slick, they're professionally executed, and they send a very clear message, not just to us, but to those people in Paris, like the Charlie Hebdo shooters, the people in Sydney, in Canada, to people like the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston. They send a message that is very clear. you must join us, you must protect the faith, and you must kill the infidel. And that level of information warfare understanding is unfortunately not reflected by us or our Western allies. We really have ceded the battleground in the war of ideas to the enemy, and it's time for us to respond in an adequate fashion.
You know, with all of that, and like you mentioned, I mean, they are getting, you know, more and more interested in terms of the influencing of other people. What are we looking at in terms of our young people being influenced, and what is the mindset that they're grabbing on with this right now? What do you think? That is it almost as if like military recruitment, where they put it out to say, listen, kind of join our fight. You know, you're one of our brothers or you're one of our sisters. Join our fight. What is the what's the draw?
I think there is an analogy. There are parallels to military recruitment, but the simplest thing to understand, it's about providing somebody with meaning. We could have a long philosophical discussion today about what's happened in the West in the last 30 or 40 years, about how meaning or understanding the purpose of existence has really been hollowed out or is a vacuum for many communities of young men around the world, and especially in the West. And if you're a young man, a 17-year-old, if you're looking for meaning, if you don't understand what's going on in the country of your birth, you look at your parents and their integration or lack of integration, you are potentially a very, very susceptible recruit who can be won over by the message of, you want meaning? We'll give you meaning. Do you want to be a holy warrior? This isn't just a job. This is about serving the transcendental, about a truth bigger than yourself. And this is the big thing that they have that we don't have, is that if you die in this war, you know what? You're going to go straight to paradise. We have this shahid, this martyrdom guarantee that for many people is the final part of the puzzle. Not only do I find meaning, not only do I find camaraderie, but I'm actually involved in a personal salvific event when I take the war to the infidel.
You know, with all of that, information warfare, how do we battle that, Dr. Gorka? I mean, that's one of the toughest battles, the battles of the mind. You know, and we always talk about it. How do we battle the mind? How do we, you know, you can take a site down for a minute. You know, our cyber people can take a site down, but one pops right back up. You know, and you know, we've created centers in State Department, the Center for, you know, Strategic Counterterrorism Communication. We're doing certain things. Are we doing enough to battle the battle of the mind?
No, not at all. It's wonderful you asked this question. I just came from a meeting literally this morning with an element in the Marine Corps that's front and center on this issue. Number one, we need to tackle the enemy on the level of what they're doing. We need to talk about the religious aspect, not be politically correct about it, and undermine how they leverage Islam to do what they do. We have to talk about the Muslim victims of their attacks, which far outnumber the Christians or the Jews or the Yazidis. Secondly, we have to make jihad unsexy. It is very cool from various parts of the world today, whether you're in Paris or in Bradford in England or in Indonesia, it's very cool to be a jihadi. We have to make it as uncool as if you are a Nazi. We have to delegitimize the ideology. And the last thing that we're not doing at all, we're not really supporting those very small numbers of brave Muslims out there that are doing this by themselves, the reformists, the people who want to say, Islam is a religion, but it must be modernized for the current era. Certain aspects of this 7th century doctrine do not apply today, and we need to contextualize the faith the way Christianity and Judaism and other religions contextualize themselves. These people are in the dark. They're in the wilderness. We don't support them, and they need our help, just like we supported the dissidents during the Cold War, the people who understood communism but understood that it needed to be destroyed from the inside.
You know, in terms of that, it seems as if should we start rededicating resources to kind of the more the information warriors, our own propagandists, our own dynamics of understanding cultures and how to relay the right message? Is there a way we can get to young kids and kind of say, listen, you can be involved in something different? Maybe you can be involved in creating a new country, that you're the future leaders of this country. And it doesn't have to be this caliphate dynamic of extremism, But it can be a model like Jordan, or it can be a model like Turkey or something like that. But you guys can be involved and separate the secularism of you know, and like we have of mosque and state, like you mentioned. Do we need to now put more budgetary resources in all of our branches like this?
Absolutely. I am convinced of the fact, and this is what we're trying to convince the rest of the U.S. Armed Forces and the intelligence community of, that if you get this part of the mission correct, you can actually win the fight without having to deploy your units. Information operations, or strategic communications, if you prefer, isn't just an appendix to an operation. It's not the thing you do at the end of the day when you've planned how to deploy your Marine unit or your Air Force unit. It should be the first thing you do. Technically, it should be what we do in phase zero. You can, warfare, whoever you're fighting, whether you're fighting Hitler, whether you're fighting Alexander the Great, or whether you're fighting ISIS and Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, warfare is at its essence a battle of wills. Mm-hmm. And if you can undermine the will of your enemy without using force, that is the ultimate victory. That's what a very wise man, Sun Tzu, said thousands of years ago. You can only do that through influence operations, through information, through sending a message that undermines their backbone, their spine, and removes from them their cadre and the populace that supports them. So, yes, we need to invert the pyramid. We need to de-emphasize the kinetic aspects of this war. Don't get me wrong, killing Bin Laden is important, but we need to emphasize much more the war of ideas and the ideational, the ideological part of this conflict, because that's what will bring final victory. Counting body bags didn't work in Vietnam, and it's not going to work now. The ultimate victory is when jihadi ideology is delegitimized by us and by our Muslim allies.
Excellent points, Dr. Gorka. We are talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is the Major General C. Matthew Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at Marine Corps University. He's teaching there, teaching Marines about strategic warfare, about terrorism, about the Middle East, and now really, really getting into the dynamic of influence operations, information operations. How do we battle and win the battle of the minds? That's where it's going with the long-term game. We can't kill our way out of terrorism. We have to really influence people to change their mindset and for them not to become that. We're talking to him. He also has a great blog called thegorkabriefing.com, and it's thegorkabriefing.com. So check that out and see what you can find there in terms of terrorism, about strategic issues and everything else. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking about the important issue of terrorism. We're talking about possibly developing some new ideas. I mean, these ideas have been around, but we're really talking about how do we change the minds of people who are going down the road into terrorism. This is not just a battle where we're, you know, sending bombs down, or we're sending our special forces team, which they're all needed and they're all valuable, but we need to put more resources into battling the mindset, the paradigm, the people's ideologies, and get into people's heads that this is not the right way to fight the battle. We're talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University. He is teaching Marines about terrorism, about the Middle East, about strategic warfare, about influence operations and everything else. You can also find him on the Gorka Briefing, and that's thegorkabriefing.com. Check out his site. He has a number of different resources on terrorism and everything else. Dr. Gorka, I wanted to kind of switch gears into looking at around the other regions, especially as we kind of swing right next door to areas of Somalia, to areas of Nigeria, and everywhere else. We have different organizations, and Boko Haram has said, hey, we're dedicating ourselves to ISIS. We've just had the recent Kenya attack at the university from Al-Shabaab. And when we look at the bigger picture of terrorists and these organizations, is it the same thing, and are they tied into ISIS like they say they are?
Superb question. Yes. The thing that is not well appreciated is that we have in our official agencies and intelligence community emphasized individuals and organizations over ideas. So we only really care about a group, or we only cared about a group for years if it had an operational connection with Al-Qaeda, for example. When the fact is, the connective tissue between all of these organizations, whether it is Al-Qaeda and the Al-Nusra Front, or ISIS, the Islamic State, or Al-Shabaab, or Boko Haram, there is a connection, and it's their shared ideology. It doesn't matter whether you're in Nigeria or whether you're attacking that college in Kenya. The thing that links you is your belief in fundamentalist Islam and the need to recreate the caliphate. That's why these organizations really are part of one global movement. And when it comes to Africa specifically, we need to also understand that Muslims are dying at the hands of Muslims in the Middle East. But in Africa, especially in Nigeria, it really is a war against Christians. If you look at the hundreds of girls that were taken hostage by Boko Haram from that Christian school, if you look at the college that was attacked in Kenya, we are talking about a religious genocide against the indigenous Christians executed by Muslim extremists. And it's not really about what many people say is the problem, which is poverty and lack of education. It is a religious war from a fundamentalist perspective that targets the Christian co-religionist in this region, and it's not portrayed as such, and that makes it very difficult to have the correct policy responses.
You know, there's a big question right now. Nigeria just elected a new leader and who comes more from the Muslim side. And this battle has been going on, like you said. This is not a short-term battle. This is a battle from Christians against Muslims for quite some time in terms of Nigeria. And every time one group loses, then they start to use violence against the other group. What can we anticipate with the new leader? Will this now say, well, was Boko Haram part of their political effort, or will we see something different, or will this thing continue to go?
Well, the conventional wisdom is that this change of government was really a result of the lack of the last administration in Nigeria taking the fight to the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And if we look at the girls that were taken hostage in Chibok, then I think that's a fair assessment that the Nigerian government was not capable or was unwilling to really engage adequately. Whether the new administration can is another question. What you have in Nigeria is endemic corruption. We know that there are even connections between some elements of the security forces and the terrorists. So the issue is whether or not there will be adequate leadership from the top down that makes an example of corrupt officials and is prepared to risk perhaps short-term popularity for long-term gain by engaging, as has to be done, directly with the terrorists. Only time will tell. But God willing, we will see a shift and more leadership brought to the problem.
You know, with all of that, as we look at the situation in terms of even this situation with Al-Shabaab and this recent Kenya attack, again, what's the long term game? We had put resources into Somalia, and we've been dealing with that situation for quite some time, Dr. Gorka, as we both know, that situation has not gone away. Kenya tried to put in resources. Ethiopia and other people tried to put in resources in Somalia and other areas. What's the long term goal with Al-Shabaab as well?
Well, I think, again, just like with Iraq and the Islamic State and Syria and ISIS, the same story holds. You have corruption is very much part of the problem, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be the kinetic application of force that brings ultimate victory. It will be a delegitimization of the ideology of these individuals. So it will be primarily a job of the local administrations, the local governments, to be the face of that information campaign against the jihadists, but we can help them, we can support them, we can give them access not only to intelligence but also to the most modern means of communication that allow for an adequate response in the social media domain, for example. So whatever theater it is, whether it's Africa, the Middle East, the Caucasus, or Asia, it is going to be about delegitimizing the ideology of jihad.
You know, as I think about it, what's your long-term dynamics of this, Dr. Gorka? I know you probably sit around and debate this all day. What do you think about how do we kind of get to a point of where we can maybe provide and get some peace in Africa? I know it's not going to be an easy solution. Do we need to pull back a little bit? Do we need to engage more? I mean, where does America need to be in this?
I think the first thing that you have to understand is that we can't solve everybody's problems.
Right.
We have to prioritize and we have to be realistic. We have to assist those people who want our assistance, but most important of all, they have to be capable of absorbing our assistance. Throwing money at a problem
right.
in ways that just potentially make it worse or could help the narrative of the bad guys because we make the indigenous government look more corrupt, that is not the smart move. So you have to look at every country in Africa, make a very clinical, unemotional analysis. How much does its stability matter to America? If it matters, we should help them, but only if that help can actually be absorbed by the government and used effectively. If it can't, then we have to look at first ways to improve their capacity to absorb that assistance. That's the first check I would make on any a list of who we give aid to and how we give them aid.
We've been talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorkin. I just want to thank you, Dr. Gorkin. We're going to kind of have you back on a regular basis to give some updates about things that are going on. I know you're involved in a lot of different things, and so hopefully one day we can give some updates on a number of different things you're involved in, some important work that you are doing. Dr. Sebastian Gorkin is the Major General Matthew C. Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at Marine Corps University. He is teaching terrorism, teaching Middle East, teaching strategic warfare, teaching influence operations to Marines and other officers and other members of government, and are also our international military allies who are there as well. And hopefully we can get into the minds of our military leaders to begin making some differences in terms of the strategy about how we use our resources and how we use our people effectively in this war against terrorism. Thank you, Dr. Gorkin.
You're absolutely welcome. Anytime.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.